Welcome to Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all of the time. Join me, your host Sam Wiles, as we discover the history, the music, and the man behind it all, Paul McCartney. To get in contact with the show, email us at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com.
Guten Abend and willkommen to another episode in Hausen of Paul or Nothing, the place to get all of your Paul all the time. I am your host Sam Wiles, and today I'll be bringing you another digressional, diversionary, indulgent bonus episode for your listening pleasure. Right, let's get the housekeeping out of the way. Let's keep this one breezy, people. Help keep the show ad-free and free to download by supporting our Patreon. The links are in the description. Like I say, the show will always be free. I work really hard to maintain my full-time job whilst I make this show. The goal one day, obviously, would be to do this full-time. But until that time, we will do the best with what we are given. Check out patreon.com/McCartneyPodcast. And if you think, you know, you'd have liked to buy me a coffee or a beer for my work on the show, well, you can do the next best thing on Patreon. Drop us an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. I always love reading out your correspondence on the show. Keep sending it in. But right now, the real thing I want to hear is your McCartney stories. How did you discover him? When did you first see him live? Maybe you've met him and you're insanely lucky. Send me your McCartney stories to paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Check out the blog as well when you've got a few spare minutes. The blog, indeed like the podcast now, is up and running. Lots of articles are on the go. Again, many of the blog articles, ranging from, you know, fixing the albums to Linda to Lennon to lyrics, do in fact eventually become fully fledged bonus episodes. So if you want to see some content exclusively early, get that early access, then check out the blog at www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. That's www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. Find us on YouTube and on our Facebook page simply by typing in Paul or Nothing or Paul McCartney Podcast. Drop us a 5-star iTunes review if you can, and I know you can, so you should bloody well do it. And most importantly of all, if you want to keep up to date with the show, if you want to see what's coming up and coming out, or if, like many people, you just want to see how far I can stretch my content to fill up a Twitter account, then please follow us on our Twitter, which is simply @McCartneyPod. Whew! We are done. Let us move on. As you surely know by now, the main thrust of the show is reviewing album by album, song by song, the work, the oeuvre of Paul McCartney. But today, we have a different kind of episode for you, the great people of the world. To be fair, actually, it's one of the first bonus episodes for a while now that could actually generally be considered as a true, quote-unquote, bonus episode. This is not a scheduled interview. This isn't part of the three concurrent bonus episode side series that are, you know, running parallel with the main show. And this isn't a glorified, redone blog post. No, this is a truly spur-of-the-moment, let's-see-where-this-goes kind of bonus episode. So, let's see where it goes. Today, basically, we will be... and... yeah, therein lies the problem. I'm not sure if, you know, today is a review. I guess it's a discussion. And it's a little off the beaten track. But today I wanted to discuss a delightfully charming cameo by Paul within the realms of pop culture. And that is his appearance on the British game show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Christ, that theme is just amazing, isn't it? It's almost something like Paul wrote for the McCartney 2 sessions or the Fireman, but, you know, during the apocalypse or something. It's just so incredibly powerful and iconic, but maybe that's just because my dad played this show every single day for about 7 years. No, Sam, as tempting as it may be to do a bonus episode on TV theme tunes, we must crack on. For the sake of full disclosure, I will admit right now that the idea for this episode is not entirely my own. And by not entirely my own, I mean not mine. Good friend to the show, ex-co-host, one of my very best friends, and future guest on our McCartney 2 episode, Tom Quee, on his own podcast, Alphabetallica, where he alphabetically reviews Metallica songs, uploaded a bonus episode of his own show where Lars Ulrich, the drummer and co-songwriter for Metallica, went on to the American export of the same ITV game show. And I basically took one look at this and I thought, huh, that's interesting. I wonder if Paul McCartney did that. Oh my gosh, Paul did the exact same thing. I'm sorry, Tom. Thank you for the idea. I'm sure I will see you in court after we record another couple of episodes together for your show. And it will become very interesting indeed as we move through this episode, as we see how many general knowledge questions Paul will have answered when compared to Lars at the end of the show. But, swiftly moving on, for those of you not in the know, what is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I'm sure for the majority of you this is kind of needless, but for those handful out there, it's essentially a game show whereby answering an increasing number of increasingly difficult general knowledge questions correctly earns you a higher cash prize. And in the era where I watched it, at least, I know both UK and US rules have been revamped since the initial release, but if you reach £1,000 or £32,000, then you would be guaranteed to at least walk away with that amount should you get any further questions wrong, which is a nice safety net, and the majority of contestants would walk away with either £1,000 or £32,000. The best part and most notorious little nugget of the show's history ever was a cheating scandal whereby someone in the audience would cough the correct answer and steer the person actually playing towards the correct one. So, you know, say if the answer was C, he'd go... And guess what? The fucker won! He actually did it. He was later caught and stripped of his winnings, but that's the thing when people talk about when asked about this show. And, you know, if you don't mention the whole fact that he was caught, it makes it a much better story. It was not uncommon, as with many game shows, for there to be celebrity episodes, and this show was hardly known for its A-listers, but maybe at a career lull, who knows, McCartney decided to finally, after no popular demand, make his appearance on the show in 2004. However, he did not appear alone. No, he instead appeared on one of the many spin-offs of the show called Celebrity Couples, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, whereby a variety of celebrities of varying degrees of fame would compete for money for charity. Now, this does mean that Paul could only appear with one person, and one person only, and that is... Heather Mills. Sorry, Heather McCartney. And yeah, basically the rest of this episode kind of writes itself now, doesn't it? I mean, I obviously will get onto a Heather Mills episode after I do a Linda episode, and you know, probably after I have to do a Jane Asher episode as well. But there will be a full Heather Mills episode at some point where I will spew a lot of unjustified and misplaced vitriol, but this really isn't the best portrayal of Heather or her relationship with Paul at all. If anything, this appearance is one big microcosm of both their entire relationship with each other and their joint relationship with the press slash public. Make no mistake, folks, Heather Mills, whatever she did or did not do, and I'm sure she had to put up with a lot of, you know, a lot of Paul's bullshit on her own end. Either way, she is, or at least was at the time, one of the most reviled characters in the public eye. And I do say character, because that's all she could be, unless you were paying super close attention, as she is essentially paraded around like some sort of evil Sheriff of Nottingham figure these days. You know, if I could teach you all one lesson out there on the internet, folks, it would be, do not fuck with Paul McCartney in the public or in the courtroom. He will fucking slay you. And he slayed her. I mean, he slayed her with £24 million, but that's really a small amount for Paul now, isn't it?
Oh, you know, I think that's what I made off London Town, you know?
Like I say, whilst Heather could fill a whole episode, this is one of the best times to talk about her. But to just talk about her would be quite boring, which makes me worry about how I'm going to write that upcoming episode. But we are here to talk about a game show and not a big divorce settlement. Though this does remind me of one of the best comments on the YouTube video of this episode. The one that solicited an actual laugh from me out loud. I actually lolled. And it simply reads as thus. Who wants to be a millionaire? Heather certainly did. Ooh, bam, ouch. Could someone please get Miss Mills some burn cream? Because that was scalding. But before we get onto the on-screen appearance, I just want to take a quick moment to praise whoever wrote host Chris Tarrant's autocue, as it's simply one of the greatest, most subversively mean-spirited pieces of writing jokes in game show history. So essentially, it reads, and so does Chris, the indomitable host of this show. He says that Paul was a Beatle, written some of the greatest songs of all time, performed over 3,000 times, and has been one of the most influential artists of all time. And we're introducing Heather. Chris reads, and I quote, at 15, Heather ran away from home to join a fun fair, but ended up homeless, sleeping in a cardboard box under Waterloo Station. And yeah, he does admittedly go on to list her modelling and charity achievements, but fuck me, Chris, that is one hell of a comparison to make, isn't it, mate? One of them is a Beatle, one of them slept in a cardboard fucking box. Fucking hell, that is one of the funniest things I never expected to see whilst making the notes for this show. You know what? I'm probably just going to insert the whole audio in here now just for effect. I swear, that has to be the real expression of the opinions of the writing staff or management of the show. Or maybe they knew she was just really, really clever and they wanted to throw her off with some Trumpian mind games. Who knows? Also, when watching that intro, I was just sat there thinking, will he mention the leg? Will he mention the leg? Is he going to mention the leg? And then, sure enough, they just couldn't resist. They, of course, mentioned how Heather lost her leg in an accident with the police motorcycle. I'm sure that's exactly what she wants to be fucking reminded about. A moment where she's supposed to be winning some money for charity with her husband on a quiz show, and she's forced to relive the time she received crushed limbs, a punctured lung, and the bloody violent traumatic loss of her leg 6 inches below the knee. But no, on to the questions, Heather. Try and keep up. Pay attention now, yeah? So they come on and Chris introduces them and he's as witty and as charming and as wryly smarmy as usual. And what you immediately pick up on is that the dynamic between Paul and Heather and Chris as a host, a threesome, if you will. And the dynamic between Paul and Heather is definitely something Chris picks up on. You can see it in his face. Like so many of the greatest works of art and fiction, it is the name of the hero you remember. But usually the villain is the one with the most lines and the best lines. And just like Iago, Darth Vader and Hans Gruber before her, Heather makes sure she gets her stuck in the middle with you, chopping the ear off scene before she leaves. What happens is that we have possibly the greatest singer-songwriter slash musician of all time on our TV screens, and instead we have to sit through what feels like 14 minutes of breathless drivel from one of the most hated figures in not just music and the media, but seemingly the entirety of the general population. And he's just so boyishly quiet and whimpered, and he just looks whipped, and it's a pain to look at. Because it is sexist to imply that a man is weaker for enacting in compromise in a relationship, but also, whipped is the best way to describe how Paul's acting in this right now. You couldn't look at me and not say the same. Chris points out Paul's quietness for a big audience laugh, and it's clear how that is meant to be interpreted, isn't it? That Heather is this classic, prototypical, overbearing partner who never lets her other half get a word in, and in an instant she comes across as slightly off her own arse with a dash of general unpleasantness. Although, in contrast, I will admit it is a breath of unique fresh air to see someone physically capable of clipping Macca's wings, no pun intended. You can really see it chiselled onto Paul's face in stone that he's clearly a bit uncomfortable being exposed as a couple on this show. And I don't think I'm wrong when I say that I detect a little bit of embarrassment on his part about the whole situation. But in all fairness, the same would probably be the case if it was Linda. Though, if you're squirming now, Paul, just wait until the fucking divorce settlement, mate. It's like one of those relationships where the guy clearly loves the girl, but he doesn't like bringing her out in public or introducing her to his mates, as he secretly knows how much of a lame duck she really kind of is. And it's sad to see Paul in this way, really. I mean, as sad as I can feel for a super talented, super successful billionaire, that is. Despite everything I've just said, I would be lying if I said I didn't see a spark and a connection between the two of them as a couple. Yes, folks, I know. We all love the lovely Linda. This is not going to become a Heather Mills championing podcast at all. If anything, I'm quite ambivalent about her. But come on, Paul clearly wants to be in this relationship at this point at least, and they wouldn't be divorced anyway for another 4 years. So they'd probably be happy for at least another 18 months or so. They're very coupley, always holding hands and kissing like it's a fucking tabloid shoot. We are a happy couple. We are in love. Like they're fucking Jay-Z or Beyonce or something. One of my favourite lines from the whole night is from Chris Tarrant saying, "Will you stop rubbing Paul? But I want to rub him." And I love it because that's exactly the kind of fanboy shit I would say. And the restraint that Chris Tarrant shows to not just bring the whole show to a halt and just ask Paul McCartney questions about the Beatles and Wings is saintly. Truly saintly. Well done, Chris. Hume remained composed as fuck, which is more than I could have surely done. What is clear, though, is that Paul is still an absolute darling on the screen. The camera loves him, baby. He's very charming, very funny, and he isn't taking the whole thing too seriously. Though Paul later does say, "If I get this wrong, I really am getting it in the neck." So I do think that underneath the darling veneer that he's projecting, he is genuinely trying to impress and not rile up his missus here. And the world for that matter, because you can't be the writer of Blackbird, Yesterday and Eleanor Rigby and then incorrectly guess the capital of Australia now, can you? But then again, this is the guy who also wrote Mumbo, so anything is possible, really. Now, I do admire Heather's dedication and tenacity at trying to beat this game show. I always like the idea that people will watch game shows and then work out their flaws and try and exploit them. And what Heather did, she got the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire board game, and she would ring all of her friends who she would be considering to be her phone-a-friend, and she would test them with the questions from this board game as to whether she could, you know, trust them as one of these phone-a-friends. You know, regardless of people's thoughts for her, I thought this was a very cute little moment. It made me laugh. I thought it was quite charming that she's going through to such lengths to do well in this. But obviously she is someone who is far more charity-centric in her professional life, so of course she's going to take it completely seriously. And she does see the money as something that she should, you know, really genuinely go for. Just before we begin, the charity that Paul and Heather are representing and playing for, a charity obviously very close to Heather's heart, is called Adopt a Landmine or Adopt a Landmine UK, and it's an organisation that works around the world in places like Afghanistan, Angola, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Cambodia, Croatia, Iraq, Laos, Mozambique and Vietnam to help amputee victims and clear out large areas of still active minefields. After the divorce, Heather pledged to donate a large portion of her £20 million divorce settlement to Adopt a Landmine UK, and whilst the official figures have not been released, they are of course her own private affairs here in the UK, and to be fair, she did keep the donation pledge nice and vague, so well done her. And after 10 years, it seems either two things have happened. Either she's got these ridiculous living expenses like the tabloids say, and she's just spunked it all up the wall, and now she's living a much simpler lifestyle by comparison, after, you know, and just continuing doing her own work. Or she bought a load of property, invested in a load of property, gave loads to her kids and her family, spunked some of it up the wall, as anyone should after a £24 million divorce settlement, and gave some to Adopt a Landmine. And now he's living a much simpler lifestyle by comparison whilst doing her own work. Unfortunately, the fantasist in me would prefer the first one to be the truth, but, you know, I'm definitely sure the second one is the case. But anyway, let's crack on with the show. I'm now going to read to you out the questions and answers as they appeared in the show, with any witty, hilarious commentary that I may feel I need to interject with. So the first five questions of the show are super easy and are basically meant to hold your hand until you can at least get to the £1,000. So don't think you're too smart just because you're getting these ones right. Question one. On a standard clock face, which number is on the bottom? And, you know, everyone laughs, the crowd laughs. That's probably the easiest question I've ever heard on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Everyone giggles. They get it right, obviously, of course. They move on. Question number two. What is the name of the item of furniture consisting of an upright frame with drawers? Obviously, the answer is chest. Question three. Which of these words refers to making a choice between two or more options? Now, I know this episode came out in 2004, and this show is kind of aimed at a demographic that's much older than me. So if it's aimed at kind of 35 to 50 year olds, and this episode's 14 years old now, so this information is for people, you know, potentially up to 65 years old, and therefore I am not embarrassed in any way to say that the answer to this question I have never heard of. I have never heard of plumping before. I would have had to have used a lifeline. Yes, this early in the game. But Paul gets it right. They move on. Question number four. Five-a-side is a popular form of which sport? Paul adorably says golf here, but of course the answer is football. And question number five, which of these distances is the longest? And appropriately, this is the most difficult of the easy questions, and they do spend a lot of time debating whether it's a mile, 2 kilometres, 3 furlongs, or 4 metres. I had absolutely no idea what a furlong was either. I've only known the actor Edward Furlong, so I had to go and check that one out. Thank you for that, Paul. And the answer was 2 kilometres. And with that, Paul and Heather get to the £1,000 mark, which is safe now. Whatever happens to them, they will at least get to donate £1,000 to charity. Obviously, that's a massive amount to Paul. Following on, question six. Roy Walker was the original host of which TV game show? The answer is Catchphrase. I wouldn't have known that. Question seven. Confiture is the French word for which food? Now, the answer was jam. I kind of only worked that one out because I was thinking of maybe confectionery, and I thought the words were kind of like maybe a similar root. But when these guys were coming up with these questions, I know it's all completely random and it's supposedly not fixed, but guys, this is the guy who wrote Michelle, you dickheads. So think about it before you give him a question about the French language. I mean, don't even get me started on Picasso's last words or Café on the Left Bank. Question 8. Which of these titles was featured in Sue Townsend's second diary of Adrian Mole? So here Paul and Heather use an Ask the Audience, and the audience said Growing Pains with an overwhelming majority. Paul and Heather kind of had an inclination that it was Growing Pains. It was kind of the only one that had that kind of good ring of a title feeling. And remember, it is the second in those diaries, and there was an early one that said something about birth, so Growing Pains was kind of like the next one on, so I do see how they worked that one out. Question number 9. Which of these cities is the birthplace of Dr. Martin Luther King? Now, they did get quite stuck on this one, and even though Paul was trying to show off and display a bit of his presumably Blackbird-based civil rights knowledge, they just don't move past this one for the lion's share of the episode. That this is most of the show, and it is quite great to see Paul visibly distressed, really, just because of how much I regularly deify the guy. And it ends up coming down to their phone a friend saying Little Rock was the birthplace of Dr. King, and then they're still not sure, so they use their 50-50 lifeline, and that took the two answers down to Charleston and Atlanta. Heather ends up putting each of those answers in one of her hands, and they just pick one at random, and when they finally get it right, yes, they actually get it right through chance, Paul, Heather and Chris Tarrant are just screaming with joy. It is really funny. Then it's at this point when the klaxon sounds, denoting that they have indeed run out of time, and viewers will have to tune in next time to see how Paul and Heather do. Now, undoubtedly, Heather and Paul do not move an inch. They film the next segment 30 seconds later, and the whole thing is just probably one big pre-planned ruse by the television studios to get more bang for their buck and have Paul McCartney technically appear in 2 episodes. Unless Paul and Heather are in fact a dirty pair of scrubbers and they wore the same fucking unwashed outfits 2 days running. But the result is all the same. McCartney now features on both the Christmas Eve and Christmas Day episodes. Imagine putting that in the TV guide. And seriously, people, back in the early to mid-2000s, this show was king. And all the eyes of the common folk across the land would be fixated upon that screen. You know, rather than spending Christmas Day with their families or something. And question 10. Kathleen Ferrier was famous in which field? And Paul pretty much straight away just goes, music. And they get it right, securing them the 32,000-pound milestone. So anything from here on out now, they will have raised £32,000 for charity. Now, with the next question, you may as well play it, seeing as how you have nothing to lose if you do get the question wrong. And spoiler alert, since this is the final question of their show, I'm going to give you all of the answers now, so you can play along at home as well and see if you are indeed cleverer than Paul McCartney and a tri-limbed ninny. Right, let's do this properly here, folks. I want to set the mood. I want to hear the music. Ooh, there we are. That's good. Let me just get into character. B is the symbol for which chemical element? Is the answer A, barium, B, bromine, C, boron, or D, bismuth? Okay, is it your final answer? You sure? 100% sure about that? Okay. And look, folks, I'll admit to you right now that I went straight for barium. I had my eyes set on barium. It has a good, strong-sounding chemical, elemental-sounding name. Bromine was in a close second. And, you know, you can take one look at boron and bismuth and just see that they're going to be those annoying fucking elements that are completely unrelated to their spelling. They'll be like S small p or N small r, just to mess with your head or something. I mean, if this question was about, say, the H atom or fatter physical studies, then maybe Paul would have had more of an idea, but unfortunately not. And obviously Paul and Heather clearly thought the same thing as me, that the barium's a good sounding one, they may as well go for it. And this question here, the £62,000 prize, is the real baptism of fire, as it were. The one that separates the wheat from the chaff, the amateurs from the pros, and they're going completely blind, they have no lifelines, no clue, and no hope. But they do walk away with £32,000 either way, so they take a stab at it, and yeah, barium straight into the trap. Barium is represented as BA, big B, small a, and despite Paul's cute little objections to the contrary, and that they did in fact meant to say boron, boron has the chemical symbol of B. And Paul looks absolutely deflated. You know, as deflated as a guy who could probably afford to buy the charity several times over that they're donating to anyway, and I do not put it past the sneaky McCartney to have given the charity the sum of the difference or even more of what they needed to raise anyway. the game show was just a formality, really, with a nice opportunity to give them a bit of exposure on ITV. As Heather pointed out, with that prize money through Adopt a Landmine UK, they could either fit 1,066 children in war-torn third world nations with artificial limbs, or clear 32,000 square metres of area filled with landmines, which, in all fairness, is fucking incredible when you think about it. Yes, I am sure there is a very easy joke somewhere about how I'm sure Heather would have preferred to have kept the £32,000 for herself, but upon reflection, I already feel like I've been a bit too harsh on the woman, so I'm only going to limit myself now to mocking her with what's written directly in my notes. No more ad-libbing. I don't want to be cruel. So, the big question, folks, the big question that I posed at the start of the show is, how have we done against my friend Tom Quisho? How have we done against Alpha Metallica? How did Paul McCartney do against Lars Ulrich on the American version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Where do these two line up mentally? I know Lars is supposedly the brains behind Metallica, so this should be an interesting comparison. Lars, on the American sister version of the show, actually made it past the question that stumped McCartney and bagged himself a nice $64,000. Dollars meaning he is actually worth less in the world trade, in world stock, but we will ignore the exchange rate for the purposes of this little comparison. Let's be fair to Alpha Metallica as well here, folks. Lars's $64,000 question was, which of the following places would you most likely find a piece of apparatus called a pipette? And as someone who worked with a pipette in year 7 at secondary school, I find that question highly unworthy of £64,000. But moving on, Lars gets a little bit cocky here and he moves on to the $125,000 question. And he still has two fucking lifelines, the beast. And then he's faced with this doozy. And in the same vein as McCartney earlier, spoiler alert, either way, this was the last question asked. So again, you can play along at home again, folks. Okay, Johnny, start her up again, please. Ooh, there we are again. Thank you very much. What actress's one-woman stage show and movie are titled Without You, I Am Nothing? Is it the answer A, Lily Tomlin, B, Julia Sweeney, C, Sandra Bernhard, or D, Ellen DeGeneres? And he picked, just after making a very timely comment about Napster, A, Lily Tomlin. He picked A, and the answer unfortunately was C, Sandra Bernhard, and that's unfortunate for whatever charity he was going to go for. He's lost them thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, which again I assume he would have paid the difference out for anyway. But for me, as the host of this show, it is a godsend. It is an absolute relief. We couldn't have that bastard's other podcast doing better than us now, could we? It's clear Paul McCartney and Lars Ulrich have the same intelligence. Even though Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is not a measure of intelligence at all, in any form. Overall, the McCartneys, it's still weird calling her a McCartney, really, and I think Chris Tarrant felt the same kind of way. But yeah, their appearance, for all of its revealing pulling back of the curtain into their inner dynamics, was very fun. It was a light-hearted piece of early evening family entertainment. Paul plays the role of the game show contestant very, very well, and when Heather isn't being completely annoying, she also has a certain camera-friendly charm of her own. It was great to see Paul out of his element, doing something we don't normally see him do, and when you think about it, it's a rarity for him not to be in complete control of the situation. I think this may be one of the few times I've seen Paul ever sat across from someone and not know exactly what the following questions are going to be. I guess in the same way it's fun to see a race car driver potentially crash, there's a rush to see someone so regularly touted as a genius potentially not know the answer to a question. And in a way it's a fantastic levelling of the playing field and serves to remind us that Paul is indeed a human with limitations. As hard as that is to believe. Christ, this is getting heavy for 20 minutes of analysis of a game show appearance, isn't it? Wow. Oh, and thank fuck on a duck that Paul didn't make a complete cock out of himself by screwing it up straight out of the gate and getting £0. That could have been embarrassing. So for that, I'm eternally grateful, Paul. Honestly, I enjoyed all of this. I really enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed making this episode. And again, thank you to Tom Quay, host of Alpha Metallica, because I wouldn't have known that this wonderful piece of content exists. And now I do. And I am a more complete McCartney fan because of it. Conclusion. So yeah, that was a weird episode and a half, wasn't it? I mean, I'm sure I can squeeze an hour out of something a little more vacuous and unrelated to Paul McCartney's music, but content is content after all, and I'd rather put out something, you know, something like this out rather early, rather than looking like I'm scraping the bottle of the barrel later on. And anyway, Once again, of course, thank you for listening. I hope you had fun. I hope you enjoyed my ramblings about a woman I've never met and her intimate relationship with a man I will also never meet. I hope you're enjoying the show. I'm glad to be back. I hope you're enjoying the blog as well. The blog is up and running as well. If you have any obscure or oddball ideas of your own for any future content or bonus episodes or blog posts, or even if you just want to say hi, drop me an email at paulmccartneypod@gmail.com. Join us on the Twitter for all things Macca, which is @McCartneyPod. Leave us an iTunes review if you can spare us 2 minutes of your time. Of course, check out the new blog, which is www.paulmccartneypod.wordpress.com. Find us on Facebook and YouTube just by typing in the name. And of course, links below for our Patreon. If you fancy buying me a cup of coffee, it's the best way to go about it, because I'm not a very sociable person. Dankeschön oh so much for tuning in. Keep checking your feed regularly. There is a slew of content heading your way over the next coming weeks. I hope you're looking forward to that as much as I just can't get enough of this podcasting thing. And you lot are my enablers, really, who fuel this addiction. I'm sure Denny Lane is playing us out by now, people. Keep listening to Paul. Maybe try a new album. Revisit an old one. Just keep listening. Peace and love. Peace and love.